Zed claimed that the Seeker, in a way, named himself by the nature of his own mind and by his actions, and that the first wizard's function was simply to act on his observations by officially naming him and giving him the weapon that was to be his lifelong companion. So many different qualities and responsibilities had converged in this man she loved that she sometimes wondered how he could reconcile them all.
"Richard, are you so sure?"
Because of the importance of the post, Kaelin and then Zed had sworn their lives in defense of Richard as the newly named Seeker of Truth. That had been shortly after Kaelin had met him. It was as Seeker that Richard had first come to accept all that had been thrust upon him, and to live up to the extraordinary trust put in him. His gray eyes fairly blazed with clarity of purpose as he answered her. "The only sovereign I can allow to rule me is reason. The first law of reason is this: what exists, exists. What is, is. From this irreducible bedrock principle all knowledge is built. This is the foundation from which life is embraced. Reason is a choice. Wishes and whims are not facts, nor are they a means to discovering them. Reason is our only way of grasping reality. It's our basic tool of survival. We are free to evade the effort of thinking, to reject reason. But we are not free to avoid the penalty of the abyss we refuse to see. If I fail to use reason in this struggle, if I close my eyes to the reality of what is in favor of what I would wish, then we will both die in this, and for nothing. We will be but two more among uncounted millions of nameless corpses beneath the gray, gloomy decay of mankind. In the darkness that will follow, our bones will be meaningless dust. Eventually, perhaps 1,000 years from now, perhaps more, the light of liberty will again be raised up to shine over a free people. But between now and then, millions upon millions of people will be born into hopeless misery and have no choice but to bear the weight of the Order's yoke. We, by ignoring reason, will have purchased those mountains of broken bodies, the wreckage of lives endured but never lived." Kaelin found herself unable to summon the courage to speak, much less argue. To do so right then would be to ask him to disregard his judgment at a cost he believed would be a sea of blood, but doing as he saw they must would cast her people helpless into the jaws of death. Kaelin, her vision turning to a watery blur, looked away. "Kara," Richard said, "get the horses hitched to the carriage. I'm going to scout a circle to make sure we don't have any surprises."
"I will scout while you hitch the horses. I am your guard."
"You are my friend, too. I know this land better than you. Hitch the horses and don't give me any trouble about it." Kara rolled her eyes and huffed, but marched off to do his bidding. The room rang with silence. Richard's shadow slipped off the blanket. When Kaelin whispered her love to him, he paused and looked back. His shoulders seemed to betray the weight he carried.
"I wish I could, but I can't make people understand freedom. I'm sorry."
From somewhere inside, Kaelin found a smile for him.
"Maybe it isn't so hard,"
she gestured toward the bird he had carved in the wall.
"Just show them that, and they will understand what freedom really means. To soar on your own wings."
Richard smiled, she thought gratefully, before he vanished through the doorway. Chapter 3. All the troubling thoughts tumbling through her mind kept Kaelin from falling back to sleep. She tried not to think about Richard's vision of the future. As exhausted as she was by pain, his words were too troubling to contemplate, and besides, there was nothing she could do about it right then. But she was determined to help him get over the loss of Andereth and focus on stopping the Imperial Order. It was more difficult to shake her thoughts about the men who had been outside, men Richard had grown up with. The haunting memory of their angry threats echoed in her mind. She knew that ordinary men who had never before acted violently could, in the right circumstances, be incited to great brutality. With the way they viewed mankind as sinful, wretched, and evil, it was only a small step more to actually doing evil. After all, any evil they might do, they had already rationalized as being predestined by what they viewed as man's inescapable nature. It was unnerving to contemplate an attack by such men when she could do nothing but lie there waiting to be killed. Kaylin envisioned a grinning, toothless Tommy Lancaster leaning over her to cut her throat while all she could do was stare helplessly up at him. She had often been afraid in battle. But at least then she could fight with all her strength to survive. That helped counter the fear. It was different to be helpless and have no means to fight back. It was a different sort of fear. If she had to, she could always resort to her confessor's power. But in her condition that was a dubious proposition. She had never had to call upon her power when in anything like the condition in which she now found herself. She reminded herself that the three of them would be long gone before the men returned, and besides, Richard and Kara would never let them get near her. Kaylin had a more immediate fear, though, and that one was all too real. But she wouldn't feel it for long. She would pass out, she knew. She hoped. She tried not to think of it, and instead put her hand gently over her belly, over their child. As she listened to the nearby splashing and burbling of a stream, the sound of the water reminded her of how much she wished she could take a bath. The bandages over the oozing wound in her side stank and needed to be changed often. The sheets were soaked with sweat. Her scalp itched. The mat of grass that was the bedding under the sheet was hard and chafed her back. Richard had probably made the pallet quickly, planning to improve it later. As hot as the day was, the stream's cold water would be welcome. She longed for a bath, to be clean, to smell fresh. She longed to be better, to be able to do things for herself, to be healed. She could only hope that as time passed, Richard too would recover from his invisible but real wounds. Kara finally returned, grumbling about the horses being stubborn today. She looked up to see the room was empty. "I had better go look for him and make sure he's safe."
"He's fine. He knows what he's doing. Just wait, Kara, or he will then have to go out and look for you."
Kara sighed and reluctantly agreed. Retrieving a cool wet cloth, she set to mopping Kaylin's forehead and temples. Kaylin didn't like to complain when people were doing their best to care for her, so she didn't say anything about how much it hurt her torn neck muscles when her head was shifted in that way. Kara never complained about any of it. Kara only complained when she believed her charges were in needless danger, and when Richard wouldn't let her eliminate those she viewed as a danger. Outside, a bird let out a high-pitched trill. The tedious repetition was becoming grating. In the distance, Kaylin could hear a squirrel chattering an objection to something, or perhaps arguing over his territory. He'd been doing it for what seemed an hour. The stream babbled on without let-up. This was Richard's idea of restful.
"I hate this," she muttered.
"You should be happy, lying about without anything to do."
"And I bet you would be happy to trade places."
"I am Mord Sith. For a Mord Sith, nothing could be worse than to die in bed." Her blue eyes turned to Kaylin's. "Old and toothless," she added. "I didn't mean that you—"
"I know what you meant."
Kara looked relieved. "Anyway, you couldn't die. That would be too easy. You never do anything easy."
"I married Richard."
"See what I mean?" Kaylin smiled. Kara dunked the cloth in a pail on the floor and wrung it out as she stood. "It isn't too bad, is it? Just lying there?"
"How would you like to have someone push a wooden bowl under your bottom every time your bladder was full?"
Kara carefully blotted the damp cloth along Kaylin's neck. "I don't mind doing it for a sister of the Ajeel." The Ajeel, the weapon a Mord Sith always carried, looked like nothing more than a short red leather rod hanging on a fine chain from her right wrist. A Mord Sith's Ajeel was never more than a flick away from her grip. It somehow functioned by means of the magic of a Mord Sith's bond to the Lord Rahl. Kaelin had once felt the partial touch of an Ajeel. In a blinding instant it could inflict the kind of pain that the entire gang of men had dealt Kaelin. The touch of a Mord Sith's Ajeel was easily capable of delivering bone-breaking torture, and just as easily, if she desired, death. Richard had given Kaelin the Ajeel that had belonged to Denna, the Mord Sith who had captured him by order of Darkin Rahl. Only Richard had ever come to understand and empathize with the pain an Ajeel also gave the Mord Sith who wielded it. Before he was forced to kill Denna in order to escape, she had given him her Ajeel, asking to be remembered as simply Denna, the woman beyond the appellation of Mord Sith, the woman no one but Richard had ever before seen or understood. That Kaelin understood and kept the Ajeel as a symbol of that same respect for women whose young lives had been stolen and twisted to nightmare purposes and duties was deeply meaningful to the other Mord Sith. Because of that compassion, untainted by pity, and more, Kara had named Kaelin a sister of the Ajeel. It was an informal but heartfelt accolade. "Messengers have come to see Lord Rahl," Kara said. "You were sleeping, and Lord Rahl saw no reason to wake you," she added in answer to Kaelin's questioning look. The messengers were Dharan, and able to find Richard by their bond to him as their Lord Rahl. Kaelin, not able to duplicate the feat, had always found it unsettling.
"What did they have to say?"
Kara shrugged.
"Not a lot. Jagang's army of the Imperial Order remains in Andorith for the time being, with Rybish's force staying safely to the north to watch and be ready, should the Order decide to threaten the rest of the Midlands. We know little of the situation inside Andorith, under the Order's occupation. The rivers flow away from our men toward the sea, so they have not seen bodies to indicate if there has been mass death, but there have been a few people who managed to escape. They report that there was some death due to the poison which was released, but they don't know how widespread it was. General Rybish has sent scouts and spies in to learn what they will."
"What orders did Richard give them to take back?"
"None."
"None? He sent no orders?"
Kara shook her head and then leaned over to dunk the cloth again.
"He wrote letters to the general, though."
She drew the blanket down, lifted the bandage at Kaelin's side, and inspected its weak red charge before tossing it on the floor. With a gentle touch, she cleaned the wound. When Kaelin was able to get her breath, she asked,
"Did you see the letters?"
"Yes. They say much the same as he has told you, that he has had a vision that has caused him to come to see the nature of what he must do. He explained to the general that he could not give orders for fear of causing the end of our chances."
"Did General Rybish answer?"
"Lord Rahl has had a vision. The Harrans know the Lord Rahl must deal with the terrifying mysteries of magic. The Harrans do not expect to understand their Lord Rahl, and would not question his behavior. He is the Lord Rahl." The general made no comment, but sent word that he would use his own judgment.
Richard had probably told them it was a vision, rather than say it was simply a realization, for that very reason. Kaelin considered that a moment, weighing the possibilities.
"We have that much luck, then. General Rybish is a good man, and will know what to do. Before too long I'll be up and about. By then maybe Richard will be better, too."
Kara tossed the cloth into the pail. As she leaned closer, her brow creased with frustration and concern.
"Mother Confessor, Lord Rahl said he will not act to lead us until the people prove themselves to him."
"I'm getting better. I hope to help him get over what happened, help him to see that he must fight."
"But this involves magic."
She picked at the frayed edge of the blue blanket.
"Lord Rahl said it's a vision. If it is magic, then it's something he would know about and must handle in the way he sees it must be done."
"We need to be a little understanding of what he's been through. The loss we've all suffered to the Order. And remember, too, that Richard didn't grow up around magic, much less ruling armies."
Kara squatted and rinsed her cloth in the pail. After wringing it out, she went back to cleaning the wound in Kaelin's side.
"He is the Lord Rahl, though. Hasn't he already proven himself to be a master of magic a number of times?"
Kaelin couldn't dispute that much of it.
But he still didn't have much experience, and experience was valuable.
Kara not only feared magic, but was easily impressed by any act of wizardry. Like most people, she couldn't distinguish between a simple conjuring and the kind of magic that could alter the very nature of the world. Kaelin realized now that this wasn't a vision as such, but a conclusion Richard had arrived at. Much of what he'd said made sense, but Kaelin believed that emotion was clouding his thinking. Kara looked up from her work. Her voice bore an undertone of uncertainty, if not despairing bewilderment.
"Mother Confessor, how will the people ever be able to prove themselves to Lord Rahl?"
"I have no idea."
Kara set down the cloth and looked Kaelin in the eye. It was a long, uncomfortable moment before she finally decided to speak.
"Mother Confessor, I think maybe Lord Rahl has lost his mind."
Kaelin's immediate thought was to wonder if General Wybish might believe the same thing.
"I thought the Harrens do not expect to understand their Lord Rahl, and would not question his behavior."
"Lord Rahl also says he wants me to think for myself."
Kaelin put her hand over Kara's.
"How many times have we doubted him before? Remember the chicken that wasn't a chicken? We both thought he was crazy. He wasn't."
"This is not some monster chasing us. This is something much bigger."
"Kara, do you always follow Richard's orders?"
"Of course not.
He must be protected, and I can't allow his foolishness to interfere with my duty. I only follow his orders if they do not endanger him, or if they tell me to do what I would have done anyway, or if it involves his male pride."
"Did you always follow Darkin Rahl's orders?"
Kara stiffened at the unexpected encounter with the name, as if speaking it might summon him back from the world of the dead.
"You've followed Darkin Rahl's orders, no matter how foolish they were, or you were tortured to death."
"Which Lord Rahl do you respect?"
"I would lay down my life for any Lord Rahl."
Kara hesitated and then touched her fingertips to the red leather over her heart.
"But I could never feel this way for any other. I love Lord Rahl. Not like you love him. Not like a woman loves a man. But it is still love. Sometimes I have dreams of how proud I am to serve and defend him, and sometimes I have nightmares that I will fail him."
Kara's brow drew down with sudden dread.
"You won't tell him that I said I love him, will you? He must not know."
Kaelin smiled.
"Kara, I think he already knows because he has similar feelings about you. But if you don't wish it, I won't say anything."
Kara let out a sigh of relief. "Good."
"And what made you come to feel that way about him?"
"Many things. He wishes us to think for ourselves. He allows us to serve him by choice. No Lord Rahl has ever done that before. I know that if I said I wished to quit him, he would let me go. He would not have me tortured to death for it. He would wish me a good life."
"That and more is what you value about him. He never pretended any claim to your lives. He believes no such claim can ever rightfully exist. It's the first time since you were captured and trained to be Mord Sith that you have felt the reality of freedom. That, Kara, is what Richard wants for everyone."
She swished a hand as if dismissing the seriousness of the whole thing.
"He would be foolish to grant me my freedom if I asked for it. He needs me too much."
"You wouldn't need to ask for your freedom, Kara, and you know it. You already have your freedom, and because of him you know that too. That's what makes him a leader you are honored to follow. That's why you feel the way you do about him. He has earned your loyalty."
Kara mulled it over.
"I still think he has lost his mind."
In the past, Richard had more than once expressed his faith that given a chance, people would do the right thing. That was what he had done with the Mord Sith. That was also what he had done with the people of Andorith. Now, Kaelin swallowed back her emotion.
Not his mind, Kara, but maybe his heart.
Kara, seeing the look on Kaelin's face, dismissed the seriousness of the matter with a shrug and a smile. I guess we will simply have to bring him around to the way things are going to be. Talk some sense into him. Kara dabbed away the remnant of a tear as it rolled down Kaelin's cheek.
Before he comes back, how about getting that stupid wooden bowl for me?
Kara nodded and bent to retrieve it. Kaelin was already fretting, knowing how much it was going to hurt, but there was no avoiding it. Kara came up with a shallow bowl. Before those men came, I was planning on making a fire and warming some water. I was going to give you a bed bath, you know, with a soapy cloth and a bucket of warm water. I guess I can do it when we get where we are going. Kaelin half closed her eyes with the dreamy thought of being at least somewhat clean and fresh. She thought she needed a bath even more than she needed the wooden bowl to relieve herself.
Kara, if you would do that for me, I would kiss your feet when I get better and name you to the most important post I can think of.
I am Mord Sith. Kara looked nonplussed. She finally drew the blanket down. That is the most important post there is, except perhaps wife to the Lord Ra. Since he already has a wife, and I am already Mord Sith, I will have to be content with having my feet kissed. Kaelin chuckled, but a stab of pain through her abdomen and ribs brought it to an abrupt halt. Richard was a long time in returning. Kara had made Kaelin drink 2 cups of cold tea heavily laced with herbs to dull the pain. It wouldn't be long before she was in a stupor, if not exactly asleep. Kaelin had been just about to yield to Kara's desire to go look for Richard when he called from a distance to let them know it was him. "Did you see any of the men?" Kara asked when he appeared in the doorway. With a straight finger, Richard swiped glistening beads of sweat off his forehead. His damp hair was plastered to his neck. "No. They're no doubt off to Heartland to do some drinking and complaining. By the time they come back, we'll be long gone." "I still say we should lie in wait and end the threat," Kara muttered. Richard ignored her. "I cut and stripped some stout saplings and used some canvas to make a litter." He came closer and with a knuckle nudged Kaelin's chin as if to playfully buck up her courage. "From now on, we'll just let you stay on the litter, and then we can move you in and out of the carriage without..." He had that look in his eyes, that look that hurt her to see. He showed her a smile. "It will make it easier on Kara and me." Kaelin tried to face the thought with composure.
"We're ready, then?"
His gaze dropped as he nodded.
"Good,"
Kaelin said cheerfully.
"I'm in the mood for a nice ride. I'd like to see some of the countryside."
He smiled. More convincingly this time, she thought. "You shall have it. And we'll end up at a beautiful place. It's going to take a while to get there, traveling as slow as we must. But it will be worth the journey, you'll see." Kaelin tried to keep her breathing even. She said his name over and over in her head, telling herself that she would not forget it this time. That she would not forget her own name. She hated forgetting things. It made her feel a fool to learn things she should have remembered but had forgotten. She was going to remember this time.
"Well, do I have to get up and walk, or are you going to be a gentleman and carry me?"
He bent and kissed her forehead, the one part in her face that the soft touch of his lips would not hurt. He glanced at Kara and tilted his head to signal her to get Kaelin's legs.
"Will those men be drinking a long time?"
Kaelin asked. "It's still midday. Don't worry. We'll be long gone before they ever get back here."
"I'm sorry, Richard. I know you thought these people from your homeland..."
"They're people, just like everyone else." She nodded as she fondly stroked the back of his big hand.
"Kara gave me some of your herbs. I'll sleep for a long time, so don't go slow on my account. I won't feel it. I don't want you to have to fight all those men.
I won't be doing any fighting, just traveling my forests.
That's good.
Kaylin felt daggers twist in her ribs as her breathing started getting too fast.
I love you, you know, in case I forgot to say it. I love you.
Despite the pain in his gray eyes, he smiled. I love you, too. Just try to relax. Kara and I will be as gentle as we can. We'll go easy. There's no rush. Don't try to help us. Just relax. You're getting better, so it won't be so hard.
She had been hurt before and knew that it was always better to move yourself because you knew exactly how to do it, but she couldn't move herself this time. She had come to know that the worst thing when you were hurt was to have someone else move you.
As he leaned over, she slipped her right arm around his neck while he carefully slid his left arm under her shoulders. Being lifted even that much ignited a shock of pain. Kaylin tried to ignore the burning stitch and attempted to relax as she said his name over and over in her mind. She suddenly remembered something important. It was her last chance to remind him.
"Richard,"
she whispered, urgently just before he pushed his right arm under her bottom to lift her.
"Please, remember to be careful not to hurt the baby."
She was startled to see her words stagger him. It took a moment before his eyes turned up to look into hers. What she saw there nearly stopped her heart. "Kaylin, you remember, don't you?"
"Remember?"
His eyes glistened.
"That you lost the baby when you were attacked."
The memory slammed into her like a fist, nearly taking her breath.
"Oh.
Are you all right?"
"Yes. I forgot for a moment. I just wasn't thinking. I remember now. I remember you told me about it."
And she did. Their child. Their child that had only begun to grow in her was long since dead and gone. Those beasts who had attacked her had taken that from her, too. The world seemed to turn gray and lifeless. "I'm so sorry, Kaylin," he whispered. She caressed his hair.
"No, Richard, I should have remembered. I'm sorry, I forgot. I didn't mean to."
He nodded. She felt a warm tear drop onto the hollow of her throat, close to her necklace. The necklace with its small dark stone had been a wedding gift from Shota, the witch woman. The gift was a proposal of truce. Shota said it would allow them to be together and share their love, as they had always wanted, without Kaylin getting pregnant. Richard and Kaylin had decided that, for the time being, they would reluctantly accept Shota's gift, her truce. They already had worries enough on their hands. But for a time, when the chimes had been loose in the world, the magic of the necklace, unbeknownst to Richard and Kaylin, had failed. One small but miraculous balance to the horrors the chimes had brought had been that it had given their love the opportunity to bring a child to life. Now that life was gone.
"Please, Richard, let's go."
He nodded again.
"Dear spirits," he whispered to himself so softly she could hardly hear him, "forgive me for what I am about to do."
She clutched his neck. She now longed for what was coming. She wanted to forget. He lifted her as gently as he could. It felt like wild stallions tied to each limb all leaped into a gallop at the same instant. Pain ripped up from the core of her, the shock of it making her eyes go wide as she sucked in a breath, and then she screamed. The blackness hit her like a dungeon door slamming shut. Chapter 4. A sound woke her as suddenly as a slap. Kaylin lay on her back, still as death, her eyes wide, listening. It wasn't so much that the sound had been loud, but that it had been something disturbingly familiar, something dangerous. Her whole body throbbed with pain, but she was more awake than she had been in what seemed like weeks. She didn't know how long she had been asleep, or perhaps unconscious. She was awake enough to remember that it would be a grave mistake to try to sit up, because just about the only part of her not injured was her right arm. One of the big chestnut geldings snorted nervously and stamped a hoof, jostling the carriage enough to remind Kaylin of her broken ribs. The sticky air smelled of approaching rain, though fits of wind still bore dust to her nostrils. Dark masses of leaves overhead swung fretfully to and fro, their creaking branches giving voice to their torment. Deep purple and violet clouds scudded past in silence. Beyond the trees and clouds, the field of blue-black sky held a lone star, high over her forehead. She wasn't sure if it was dawn or dusk, but it felt like the death of day. As the gusts beat strands of her filthy hair across her face, Kaylin listened as hard as she could for the sound that didn't belong, still hoping to fit it into a picture of something innocent. Since she'd heard it only from the deepness of sleep, its conscious identity remained frustratingly out of her reach. She listened, too, for sounds of Richard and Kara, but heard nothing. Surely they would be close. They would not leave her alone. Not for any reason this side of death. She recoiled from the image. She ached to call out for Richard and prove the uninvited thought a foolish fear, but instinct screamed at her to stay silent. She needed no reminder not to move. A metallic clang came from the distance, then a cry. Maybe it was an animal, she told herself. Ravens sometimes let out the most awful cries. Their shrill wails could sound so human it was eerie, but as far as she knew, ravens didn't make metallic sounds. The carriage suddenly lurched to the right, her breath caught as the unanticipated movement caused a stitch of pain in the back of her ribs. Someone had put weight on the step. By the careless disregard for the carriage's injured passenger, she knew it wasn't Richard or Kara. But if it wasn't Richard, then who? Gooseflesh tickled the nape of her neck. If it wasn't Richard, where was he? Stubby fingers grasped the top of the corded chafing strip on the carriage's side rail. The blunt fingertips were rounded back over grubby, gnawed-down little half-button fingernails. Kaylin held her breath, hoping he didn't realize she was in the carriage. A face popped up. Cunning dark eyes squinted at her. The man's four middle upper teeth were missing, leaving his eye teeth looking like fangs when he grinned. Well, well, if it ain't the wife of the late Richard Cipher. Kaylin lay frozen. This was just like her dreams. For an instant she couldn't decide if it was only that, just a dream, or real. His shirt bore a dark patina of dirt, as if it was never removed for anything. Sparse wiry hairs on his fleshy cheeks and chin were like early weeds in the plowed field of his pockmarked face. His upper lip was wet from his runny nose. He had no lower teeth in front. The tip of his tongue rested part way out between the yawning gap of his smirk. He brought up a knife for her to see. He turned it this way and that, almost as if he was showing off a prized possession to a shy girl he was courting. His eyes kept flicking back and forth between the knife and Kaylin. The slipshod job of sharpening appeared to have been done on rough granite, rather than on a proper whetstone. Dark blotches and rust stained the poorly kept cheap steel, but the scratched and chipped edge was no less deadly for any of it. His wicked, toothless grin widened with pleasure as her gaze followed the blade, watching it carve careful slices of the air between them. She made herself look into his dark, sunken eyes that peered out from puffy slits.
"Where's Richard?"
she demanded in a level voice.
"Dancing with the spirits in the underworld." He cocked his head to one side. "Where's the blonde bitch? The one my friends said they saw before? The one with the smart mouth? The one what needs to have her tongue shortened before I got her?"
Kaylin glared at him so he would know she had no intention of answering. As the crude knife advanced toward her, his stench hit her.
"You would have to be Tommy Lancaster."
The knife paused.
"How'd you know that?"
Anger welled up from deep inside her.
"Richard told me about you."
The eyes glittered with menace. His grin widened.
"Yeah? What did he tell you?"
that you were an ugly, toothless pig who wets his pants whenever he grins. Smells like he was right.
The smirking grin turned to a scowl. He raised up on the step and leaned in with the knife. That was what Kaelin wanted him to do, to get close enough so she could touch him. With the discipline born of a lifetime of experience, she mentally shed her anger and donned the calm of a confessor, committed to a course of action. Once a confessor was resolved to releasing her power, the nature of time itself seemed to change. She had but to touch him. A confessor's power was partly dependent on her strength. In her injured condition, she didn't know if she would be able to call forth the required force, and if she could, whether she would survive the unleashing of it, but she knew she had no choice. One of them was about to die. Maybe both. He leaned his elbow on the side rail. His fist with a knife went for her exposed throat. Rather than watching the knife, Kaelin watched the little scars like dusty white cobwebs caught on his knuckles. When the fist was close enough, she made her move to snatch his wrist. Unexpectedly, she discovered she was snugly enfolded in the blue blanket. She hadn't realized Richard had placed her on the litter he'd made. The blanket was wrapped around her and tightly tucked under the stretcher poles in order to hold her as still as possible and prevent her from being hurt when the carriage was moving. Her arm was trapped inside what was about to become her death shroud. Hot panic flared up as she struggled to free her right arm. She was in a desperate race with the blade coming for her throat. Pain knifed her injured ribs as she battled with the blanket. She had no time to cry out or to curse in frustration at being so unwittingly snared. Her fingers gathered a fold of material. She yanked at it, trying to pull some slack from under the litter she lay atop so she could free her arm. Kaelin had merely to touch him, but she couldn't. His blade was going to be the only contact between them. Her only hope was that maybe his knuckles would brush her flesh, or maybe he just might be close enough as he started to slice her throat that she could press her chin against his hand. Then she could release her power, if she was still alive, if he didn't cut too deep first. As she twisted and pulled at the blanket, it seemed to her an eternity, as she watched the blade poised over her exposed neck. An eternity to wait before she had any hope of unleashing her power, an eternity to live. But she knew there was only an instant more before she would feel the ripping slash of that rough blade. It didn't happen at all as she expected. Tommy Lancaster wrenched backward with an ear-splitting shriek. The world around Kaelin crashed back in a riot of sound and motion with the abrupt readjustment to the discontinuation of her intent. Kaelin saw Kara behind him, her teeth clenched in a grim commitment of her own. In her pristine red leather, she was a precious ruby behind a clod of dirt. Bent into the agile pressed against his back, Tommy Lancaster had less hope of pulling away from Kara than if she had impaled him on a meat hook. His torment would not have been more brutal to witness, his shrieks more painful to hear. Kara's agile dragged up and around the side of his ribs as he collapsed to his knees. Each rib the agile passed over broke with a sharp crack, like the sound of a tree limb snapping. Vivid red, the match of her leather oozed over his knuckles and down his fingers. The knife clattered to the rocky ground. A dark stain of blood grew on the side of his shirt until it dripped off the untucked tails. Kara stood over him, an austere executioner, watching him beg for mercy. Instead of granting it, she pressed her agile against his throat and followed him to the ground, his eyes wide and white all around as he choked. It was a slow, agonizing journey toward death. Tommy Lancaster's arms and legs writhed as he began to drown in his own blood. Kara could have ended it quickly, but it didn't appear she had any intention of doing so. This man had meant to kill Kaelin. Kara meant to extract a heavy price for the crime.
Kara!
Kaelin was surprised that she could get so much power into the shout. Kara glanced back over her shoulder. Tommy Lancaster's hands went to his throat and he gasped for air when she rose to stand over him.
Kara, stop it! Where is Richard? Richard may need your help.
Kara leaned down over Tommy Lancaster, pressed her agile to his chest and gave it a twist. His left leg kicked out once, his arms flopped to the side, and he went still. Before either Kara or Kalin could say anything, Richard, his face set in cold ferocity, sprinted up toward the carriage. He had his sword to hand. The blade was dark and wet. The instant Kalin saw his sword, she comprehended what had awakened her. The sound had been the sword of truth announcing its arrival in the evening air. In her sleep, her subconscious recognized the unique ring of steel made by the sword of truth when it was drawn, and she instinctively grasped the danger that that sound represented. On his way to Kalin's side, Richard only glanced at the lifeless body at Kara's feet. "Are you all right?" Kalin nodded.
"Fine."
Belatedly, yet feeling triumphant at the accomplishment, she pulled her arm free of the blanket. Richard turned to Kara. "Anyone else come up the road?"
"No, just this one."
She gestured with her agile toward the knife on the ground.
"He intended to cut the Mother Confessor's throat."
If Tommy Lancaster hadn't already been dead, Richard's glare would have finished him.
"I hope you didn't make it easy on him."
"No, Lord Rahl. He regretted his last vile act. I made certain of it."
With his sword, Richard indicated the surrounding area. "Stay here, and keep your eyes open. I'm sure we got them all, but I'm going to check just to be certain no one else was holding back and trying to surprise us from another direction."
"No one will get near the Mother Confessor, Lord Rahl."
Dust rose in the gloomy light when he gave a reassuring pat to the shoulder of one of the two horses standing in their harnesses. "Soon as I get back, I want to get going. We should have enough moon for a few hours, anyway. I know a safe place to make camp about 4 hours up the road. That will get us a good distance away from all this." He pointed with his sword. "Drag his body past the brush over there and roll him off the edge, down into the ravine. I'd just as soon the bodies weren't found until after we're long gone and far away. Probably only the animals will ever find them way out here, but I don't want to take any chances."
Kara snatched a fistful of Tommy Lancaster's hair.
"With pleasure."
He was stocky, but the weight gave her no difficulty. Richard trotted soundlessly off into the gathering darkness. Kalin listened to the sound of the bodies scraping across the ground. She heard small branches snapping as Kara pulled the dead weight through the brush, and then the muffled thuds and tumbling scree as Tommy Lancaster's body rolled and bounced down a steep slope. It was a long time before Kalin heard the final thump at the bottom of the ravine. Kara ambled back to the side of the carriage.
"Everything all right with you?"
She casually pulled off her armored gloves. Kalin blinked at the woman.
"Kara, he nearly had me."
Kara flicked her long blonde braid back over her shoulder as she scanned the surrounding area.
"No, he didn't. I was standing right there behind him the whole time. I was nearly breathing down his neck. I never took my eyes from his knife. He had no chance to harm you."
She met Kalin's gaze.
"Surely you must have seen me."
"No, I didn't."
"Oh, I thought you saw me."
Looking a little sheepish, she tucked most of the cuffs of the gloves behind her belt and folded the rest down over the front.
"I guess maybe you were too low in the carriage to see me there behind him. I had my attention on him. I didn't mean to let him frighten you."
"If you were there the whole time, why did you allow him to nearly kill me?"
"He did not nearly kill you,"
Kara smiled without humor.
"But I wanted to let him believe it. It's more of a shock, more of a horror, if you let them think they've won. It crushes a man's spirit to take him then, when you've caught him dead to rights."
Kalin's head was swimming in confusion, so she decided not to press the issue.
"What's going on? What's happened? How long have I been asleep?"
"We have been traveling for 2 days. You have been in and out of sleep, but you didn't know anything the times you were awake. Lord Rahl was fretful about hurting you to get you into the carriage and about having told you what you forgot."
Kalin knew what Kara meant. Her dead baby.
"And the men?"
"They came after us. This time, though, Lord Rahl didn't discuss it with them."
She seemed especially pleased about that.
"He knew in enough time that they were coming, so we weren't taken by surprise. When they came charging in, some with arrows knocked and some with their swords or axes out, he shouted at them once, giving them a chance to change their minds.
He tried to reason with them, even then?
Well, not exactly. He told them to go home in peace or they would all die. And then what? And then they all laughed. It only seemed to embolden them. They charged, arrows flying, swords and axes raised. So Lord Ral ran off into the woods.
He did what?
Before they came, he had told me that he was going to make them all chase after him. As Lord Ral ran, the one who thought he would cut your throat yelled at the others to get Richard and finish him this time. Lord Ral had hoped he would draw them all away from you, but when that one went after you instead, Lord Ral gave me a look, and I knew what he wanted me to do. Kara clasped her hands behind her back as she scrutinized the gathering darkness, keeping watch, should anyone try to surprise them. Kaelin's thoughts turned to Richard, and what it must have been like all alone as they chased him.
How many men?
I didn't count them. Kara shrugged. Maybe 24.
And you left Richard alone with 24 men chasing after him? 24 men intent on killing him?
Kara shot Kaelin an incredulous look. And leave you unprotected? When I knew that toothless brute was going after you, Lord Ral would have skinned me alive if I had left you.
Tall and lean, shoulders squared and chin raised, Kara looked as pleased as a cat flicking mouse off its whiskers. Kaelin suddenly understood. Richard had entrusted Kara with Kaelin's life. The Mord Sith had proven that faith justified. Kaelin felt a smile stretch the partly healed cuts on her lips.
I just wish I had known you were standing there the whole time. Oh, thanks to you, I won't need the wooden bowl.
Kara didn't laugh.
Mother Confessor, you should know that I would never let anything happen to either of you.
Richard appeared out of the shadows as suddenly as he had vanished. He stroked the horses reassuringly. As he moved on beside them, he quickly checked the neck collars, the trace chains, and the breeching to make sure it was all secure.
Anything?
He asked Kara.
No, Lord Ral.
Quiet and clear.
He leaned in the carriage and smiled. Well, as long as you're awake, how about I take you for a romantic moonlight ride?
She rested her hand on his forearm.
Are you all right?
I'm fine, not a scratch.
That's not what I meant.
His smile vanished.
They tried to kill us. Westland has just suffered its first casualties because of the influence of the Imperial Order.
But you knew them.
That doesn't entitle them to misplaced sympathy. How many thousands have I seen killed since I left here? I couldn't even convince men I grew up with of the truth. I couldn't even get them to listen fairly. All the death and suffering I've seen is ultimately because of men like this. Men who refuse to see. Their willful ignorance does not entitle them to my blood or life. They picked their own path. For once they paid the price. He didn't sound to her like a man who was quitting the fight. He still held the sword, was still in the grip of its rage.
Kaelin caressed his arm, letting him know that she understood. It was clear to her that even though he'd been justly defending himself, and though he was still filled with the sword's rage, he keenly regretted what he'd had to do. The men, had they been able to kill Richard instead, would have regretted nothing. They would have celebrated his death as a great victory.
That was still perilous, making them all chase after you.
No, it wasn't. It drew them out of the open and into the trees. They had to dismount. It's rocky and the footing is poor, so they couldn't rush me together or with speed like they could out here on the road. The light is fading. They thought that was to their advantage. It wasn't. In the trees it was even darker. I'm wearing mostly black. It's warm, so I'd left my gold cape behind here in the carriage. The little bit of gold on the rest of the outfit only serves to break up the shape of a man's figure in the near dark. So they had an even harder time seeing me.
This is the end of this cassette. This program is continued on side one of cassette number 2.